Welcome to the Go Fast and Win podcast, powered by the Sharp Plays and TSP.live for this Veterans Day, November 11th. Thank you to all the veterans out there for your sacrifice and courage, along with your dedication to this country, because without all of you, the rest of us would not get to enjoy the freedoms that we have. I get to do all this silly shit that I do every day with the Sharp Plays, and it's thanks to you that I'm able to do it. So, you deserve more than just a day, but on this Veterans Day, I just want to say on behalf of myself, the TSP crew, behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, everywhere on the scenes, the TSP Army, from all of us, thank you very much for your service. All right, let's get into things for this Tuesday, November 11th, and I'm going to start with covering sort of a mailbag of topics. I get a lot of questions all the time from different people, and I figured you get some really good questions in. So I figured I would cover a couple of those here, as I think a lot of people have similar questions, or I at least get multiple questions on these different topics. So I'll cover it here in the podcast. And I think it's something that I don't mind doing every week. It seems there's interest out there, a lot of questions. People always send it in. Hey, would you want to talk about this on the podcast? Would you want to talk about that? So feel free to send in any suggestions you think would be good for the podcast or you'd like to hear about. Just go to thesharpplays.com, or you can also go to sharpplays.com. It all goes to the same spot. And in the menu on the website, just click the contact link and then just send in a general inquiry and say, hey, was listening to the podcast. Would love if you'd cover whatever. List 50 topics, one topic, whatever you want. Send it in and I'd be happy to take a look, put it on the notes, and hopefully get to it at some point. So without any further delay, I'll start off this episode with the mailbag feature. And one of the things that comes in all the time is why I use parlays. And it's funny because a lot of people just have it so ingrained in their head that parlays are sucker bets. And they are if you're the average gambler. So it's very easy to say parlays are sucker bets to people because 96% of gamblers lose money. So for them, yes, for 96% of bettors, a parlay is a minus EV or negative expected value wager. However, if you can hit above 52.4% of your spread and total wagers at minus 110 VIG, you can turn parlays into a plus EV weapon against the books, meaning that you're betting parlays with a positive ROI. And I love parlays because, and this is something that it's more random consistency, and that random consistency is a kind of an oxymoron, but basically what it means is something that should be random for some reason is showing consistency, and there's really no way to explain it within statistics. At least that's how I use the word. I've used it for things in the financial markets. I use it for things all the time in the sports betting markets, because there are just certain things that, while they should be random, are actually rather consistent. And that is, the first one would be, after a cold run, it tends to be very hot right out of the gate for whatever reason. And I love using parlays in a cold run because it means that I'm going to be in a parlay when the turn comes. And when the turn comes, if I catch one parlay, I can often erase sometimes all of the previous cold run. But in a lot of cases, I can at least erase, you know, a good portion of whatever drawdown that we took by cashing the parlay. And then the benefit is, it's usually not just limited to one day, that initial white hot burst. It usually continues for a day or two. And so not only can you cash that first parlay, but now you can use that bank to build more wagers. It can either be turning it into a rollover, whatever else, but it just is that for whatever reason, there tends to be a very high win percentage coming out of the cold run, sort of to, you know, it's a very quick progression back to the mean if you are betting with an edge. So that's the reason that I like parlays. If you go to thesharpplays.com, click on articles, and on that articles page, you just search for the word parlay, you'll see a couple articles that come up. One is a collaboration that I did with somebody else, or at least they gave me some of the background data on it that they had worked on. And it's someone I trust, so I know the data is good. And then there's another one where I just get into further detail about parlays. And of course, you can find an article up there about rollovers as well, why I like to use them, a little bit of the background and so on. So I won't get too deep into it because you can find a lot more information on thesharpplays.com. But that is why I use parlays. Yes, they are absolutely a sucker bet. I love them and I make a very strong profit on them. TSP Portfolio has a 8%, it's an over 8% ROI on parlays. That's unheard of. And so when people come to me and they go, well, I don't like betting parlays, you're leaving a lot of money on the table. And I think it's important to understand that the sound bites that people like to say don't really match up with the actual reality for a professional bettor. And you see it all the time. You get these guys who come on, whether it's TV or radio, any sort of medium, and they all spout the same sound bites. Parlays are for suckers. You know, don't use teasers on college football. Don't do this, don't do that. And these things are said so many times by so many people that when someone comes on to a show and they want to sound like they know something, the first thing to do is repeat a fact or a perceived fact that the audience basically accepts. So parlays are for suckers. Yeah, most of the audience is going to accept that. They'll go, wow, this guy really knows something. And, you know, that's kind of full of shit. They're just spouting off stuff to basically look good. But I think I'm saying basically a lot in this one, so I apologize for that. But they want to look good by saying these things that you've heard 1,000 times to lend credibility to their position. And that's all it is. Because when you dive into things, you can use teasers on college football. It should be strategic. It should be more calculated than pro football. But there are absolutely times where teasers in college football are solid. Same thing with, you know, going through zero on a teaser. Yes, there is a mathematical reason not, and you do cut the value in the teaser because you're going through -1, pick, +1, and those are, you know, low probability outcomes. So you're not getting the value that you should get there. So there's some overlap there, especially if your book will grade on, you know, a push and dial the teaser down. If it's a 3-leg, dial it down to a 2-leg and so on. So yes, there is some truth to it, but at the end of the day, there are all sorts of times that we will go through zero on a teaser because it's just warranted based on the angles and information that are out there. And it pays just fine. We have a positive ROI over 5% on teasers as well. So using exotics is not a sucker bet strategy. That is my point here. Don't just write it off because some jerk off on some show said parlays are for suckers. Yes, 96% of bettors lose. Thereby, they are considered suckers. And 96% of those, 96% of the 100% pool of bettors that are out there are not only losing money, but they're going to lose money faster on parlays. That's all. It's true. But if you're betting at a plus EV, positive expected value, and you have an edge against the books, parlays are just another tool to make some money. The next thing that I want to get into is something that people bring up a lot to me, which is you're so good at analyzing and breaking down Ole Miss football. For example, I said they'd cover against South Carolina based on a bunch of different things that I saw within the team, and they did. I saw they probably wouldn't cover against Citadel, and they did not. And, you know, obviously this is something that's been running for the past couple of years now. The reason for it is simply just being educated on the team. Yes, I am a booster. I do donate substantially to Ole Miss, so I do get, I don't want to say insider information. It's not like Kiffin is picking up the phone and calling me, but because of the newsletters I get, because of the news that I get around Oxford and things like that, I can gauge the sort of the temperature of the team. Are they, you know, hanging out and having fun all week, or are they locked in and ready to win? And when you know these motivational factors, you know how a team is operating, you can really get the pulse of that team. And it without any inside information, you know, just following the team closely, you know what players are out, you know what players are in. It happens a lot in lower level sports, for example, like in hockey. That's not really a big money sport for the sports books. They have good limits and they carry it, and a lot of people bet it, but it's nothing compared to NFL or NBA or college basketball. So NHL doesn't get the respect that these other sports get. Limits are a little lower. So while the books, of course, adjust for injuries and stuff, they often don't adjust enough. And I'll get messages from people all the time who, whether it's, you know, the Edmonton Oilers or it's the Buffalo Sabres or it's the Tampa Bay Lightning, I'll get someone sending in a message and going, hey, just so you know, these three guys are out tonight. And that's their, you know, core of their scoring. And the coach isn't sure what he's going to do. And he's going to be calling up some players from the AHL to fill in the spots. And our AHL team sucks. And, you know, they'll go through this whole breakdown and they're very well informed. Why? Because they follow the team and they know what's going on. Far more informed than the sports book. Other times you'll have guys who, again, following a certain team, and they go, hey, just so you know, they're bringing up this goalie. I'm just using hockey as an example, but this carries through with pitchers in baseball and a bunch of other things. they're bringing up this goalie. He's awesome. He is lights out. And they're treating him like he's just an average Joe in the AHL by pricing this game this way. And of course, you know, that tends to win more than it loses. And these little bits of information, just because someone is dialed in with the team, tend to pay off very well. I follow Ole Miss basketball tightly. I follow Ole Miss football tightly. Do I win 100% of my bets when I'm on or against Ole Miss? Absolutely not. But I win a very high percentage. I'm over 60% when picking on or against Ole Miss for the past couple of years now. When I go to the game, when I'm motivated enough to go to the game because I like the matchup and I want to see Ole Miss win, I am 6-0 ATS at the game for Ole Miss covering. And, you know, obviously that's kind of a luck thing. I am bringing absolutely nothing to the table. Kiffin isn't like, wow, the sharp plays is here today on scene. I got to blow this team out. But, you know, it's just funny how that sort of stuff works out. And it's hardly a coincidence. Now, am I going to go 100-0 ATS for Ole Miss when I show up at a game? Absolutely not. Just happens to be the run that's going on right now. But the point is still the same. When they beat LSU, I said they're going to kick the shit out of LSU. They beat them. They covered. The following week, they had a bye. The week after that, I said, listen, take Washington State the first quarter. I love Washington State the first quarter because this Ole Miss team has been partying for the last 2 weeks since beating LSU. They're going to come out sluggish. That game, not only did Washington State easily cover the first quarter, they almost lost the game. Ole Miss almost lost the game to Washington State because they were lethargic throughout the entire thing. And did I have any inside information? Of course not. I just knew the team. I felt the pulse of the team, following different accounts, getting newsletters of, you know, oh, the team's hanging out and relaxing in town today. I'm like, taking it a little easy, aren't they? And sure enough, it showed up in the game. So the point of this long rambling diatribe about why I am hitting at a far above even expected rate, you know, most of the sharp plays content wins at around 54 to 57%, depending on the angle and so on. Yes, group buys from the odds makers report are hitting well over 60% for the past 4 years. It's been phenomenal content. I am a little plug here. I am very proud to have the odds makers report content back as a part of the sharp plays for the next 3 years in an exclusive deal. So very excited about that. And that deal already paying dividends, 8-2 ATS on group buys since the odds makers report returned in September. So sorry for the side note there, but it's just worth noting. And, you know, the point of it all is that if you are getting, you know, quality information and you can combine it with your fundamental information about a team, you can really get lights out. So when the analytics point to Ole Miss and I have fundamental information for following the team that points to Ole Miss, now I've got a very strong play. You can do it as well. Again, I'm just illustrating. I am not anyone special when it comes to Ole Miss football, Ole Miss basketball. It's just following the team closely. But you do it. It can't just be something that, you know, I listen to talk radio for 5 minutes a day and that's it. No, you have to take an interest. I love Ole Miss football. I love Ole Miss basketball. So I follow it very closely. You can do the same thing. And there are many sharp bettors that I know out there that's all they do. They have a team that they target in each sport. And that is the only thing they bet. So they might bet, you know, just using Ole Miss again, they might bet Ole Miss football during football season. They might bet Ole Miss basketball during basketball season. They might bet the Yankees during the baseball season. And they might follow Jessica Pegula in tennis throughout the tennis season. And they just know, you know, a perfect example again is, for those of you who follow, is our buddy Francis Tiafoe, the American tennis player. The guy's my nemesis, actually, in that for a while, I could never get his pulse. I was trying to get it. I'd bet on him, he'd lose. I'd bet against him, he'd win. And then finally, this past season, because of all that, I just learned so much about him. It started to dial me in and I could see, oh, he's not going to do good in this match. He's going to be fatigued from the last one. He has a fatigue issue because I know how he plays and I know, you know, following him so closely. And sure enough, we actually did pretty good on Tiafoe this season. So little things, that's all it takes. You want to be a sharp bettor? Don't try to attack everything. Become a genius. Become highly knowledgeable about one team in each sport that you can bet on, against, sides, totals, first quarters, first half, etc. It will make a big difference in your betting. And I would also say, to go along with that, make sure that you keep a log of everything that you're analyzing on that those teams. So, you know, whoever you're picking for the NFL, you keep a log of news, information, tidbits, and wagers that you make on them and why. Because having that information and being able to go back and analyze it really helps as well for you to tighten some things up. Sometimes you can see that there are things that keep going on over and over and over again that if you see them in the future would help you to figure out who you're going to bet in the game, would point to something in favor of the team you're following for or against. So there's nothing exciting. You know, again, I'm not having lunch every day with Kiffin and getting his game plans. It's just simply a following of the team. I love Chris Beard as a coach in basketball. Loved him throughout his career. When he came to Ole Miss, I thought, oh my God, this is going to be awesome. And he's been great there. So that interest that I have in the team just helps me follow Ole Miss basketball as well. So just something to think about. Happy to answer any further questions on the topic, but that is the simple answer. Although I think I went on for about 37 minutes as to why it's a simple answer. All right, let's get to the next topic, which is drumroll is in-play betting. So I've talked about it a lot recently, and it's a big, big tool in college basketball, at least at the sharp plays, especially when we get to February and March, late January as well. When the season is getting towards the end, the point spreads tend to tighten up, the totals tighten up, and that means getting 5 or 6 extra points on a sharp buy in play can make a massive, massive difference. It was 3 years ago that I actually first provided the in-play pricing table to people and talked so aggressively about using in-play in your betting. And there are some people that back then, after hearing that and seeing the performance, all they bet is in-play now. They do not bet anything pregame except for, you know, parlays or, you know, exotics that we put into play. But for the most part, they are just betting in-play. So when there's a Hermes 40 score and it's on, I don't know, Tampa Bay plus 18 or something like that, they don't bet a pregame. They wait until Tampa plus 27 comes into play in play, and that's what they take. And if that doesn't ever come up, fine. They don't touch it. If it does, that's what they're jumping on. And it's because of the performance. Last year in college basketball, if you used any of the angles covered, whether it was in the what's now the Degenerates Corner, whether it was actual portfolio action, whether it was anything else, you know, large buys reported, small buys, whatever, you used any of that with the TSP Live in-play targets table. And the in-play targets table is just a centralized table which uses over a decade of data and finds out what the optimal price cushions are by sport. What is a price cushion? Last night, I talked about Cal State Fullerton getting a large sharp buy at plus 24.5. On that money, the books moved down to 22.5 almost immediately. So you couldn't get the 24.5, and you really shouldn't chase the 22.5. So what I said on Telegram last night was, if you want to play this angle, wait for in play, and the target is a price of 29.5. That's the best pregame price, 24.5, plus what is listed as the NCAA basketball cushion for the passive bettors of 5%. Passive aggressive, you know, it just depends how many targets you want. That's something you can read about on the table page. But that plus 5 brought you to 29.5. In the end, Cal State Fullerton lost by 29. The 29.5 was an easy cover. If you chased the sharps pregame, whether you took their price of 24.5 or you took the 22.5 that was available after I reported it, you lost. If you waited for in play and waited until that plus 5 cushion was achieved, you got the 29.5 and you cashed a ticket. Now, one of the negatives that people will bring up, someone brought it up to me today, is limits on in play. Yes, they are less than pregame. However, if you have multiple books and depending on what your unit size is, you can get the action down. I am able to get one unit down on almost anything that I want in play across all sports. One unit. And, you know, what I'm betting for one unit is probably substantially more than anyone listening to this is betting, or at least, you know, 95% of you that are listening to this are probably betting less than I am for a one unit wager. Please don't send in messages asking what I bet as one unit. I do not share that information. I don't like talking about money. It's been a personal thing, family, when I was brought up, always, you never talk about money. So I don't, that's what's ingrained in me. I'm not here to show off. Yes, there might be a time I'll show a parlay ticket that won. I do that a lot just to illustrate the value of parlays. But that was back in 2008. I rarely show any of my tickets now. It's just, again, a personal thing. So with that being said though, little detour aside, if I can get action down, 95% of you can get the action down. I would venture to say 100% of you could get the action down. You might need multiple books. You might need to rebet, but you'll be able to do it without much effort. For the most part, if you're betting under $2,000, you can get the money down no problem. Most books will take $250, $500, or $1,000 in play. And if not, two books will be more than enough to get a grand down or get $2,000 down. And most books that are worthwhile will let you rebet. If you're with a domestic, that means more than likely you're not necessarily a winning bettor. And I don't mean that as a negative thing. Domestics just kick out winning bettors a lot. So they see something in your betting that they're saying, okay, we'll let him ride it out. So great. If you're making a fortune off DraftKings, beautiful. Keep making a fortune. Whatever you're doing is working because they don't notice that you're a sharp bettor. They're just thinking you're a lucky public bettor. So keep that rolling. But with that aside, you should be able to bet almost whatever you want with DraftKings in play. They are very liberal. That's why there's all these betting scandals going on right now, because somehow people are able to put $50,000, $20,000, $10,000 on props. If you go offshore, good luck getting $1,000 on a prop at most books, let alone $10,000, $15,000, $25,000. And the only way you're getting that money down is if you are a massive loser over time. You're like a Mr. Poison. Mr. Poison can get almost any limit on anything that he wants because over time he has been a cash cow for the sports book. So even if he takes him for $50,000 on some bullshit prop, they're happy to do it because they know that $50,000 plus another $500 is coming back in short order. So anyways, that's my long spiel about in-play betting. If you are a professional bettor and you're a serious professional bettor, in-play betting has to be a tool in your toolbox. It is so valuable. The ROI that I achieve on in-play betting is substantially higher than the ROIs I achieve in pregame betting. And if you look at the TSP portfolio, all the pregame betting angles, parlays, teasers, rollover, straight bets are all well above what is considered elite. In professional betting circles, 5% ROI, 5% return on risk, meaning for every dollar you put in action, you get 5% of that money back. So if I do 20 bets of $1,000 a piece, that's $20,000 of total action, and I have an ROI of 5%, it means I'm going to make an expected $1,000 off those 20 bets that I put in. You might go, well, that doesn't seem like a lot. That shit adds up fast. A small ROI, even 3 to 5% is the average professional bettor. Average professional bettor wins 3 to 5%. Has a 3 to 5% ROI, not wins 3 to 5% of the time, has a 3 to 5% ROI, and they make a fortune off of it. If you're hitting above 5%, you are considered elite. I'm happy to say it. I love flexing on that because mostly all of our content is hitting over 5%. And that goes for the TSP insiders. Both Tony and Wolf are hitting over 5%. And parlays, teasers, rollovers, whatever, it's all over 5%. So we're doing great there. But in play, it's double digits for me. And yes, I can only usually get down maybe a unit, sometimes two, depending on the sport. And yes, I will say perhaps as many opportunities because you don't get the price you're looking for some of the time, but the ROI on it is excellent. So do not discount in-play betting. Keep it in your arsenal. But yes, it does take effort. You're getting paid for it. So it's going to take effort. You're not just going to get free money from the sports books like, hey, I'd like this bet. I don't want to put in effort. I don't want to watch the game. I get that. All of you have lives. You know, I don't know if you perceive me as just being some single guy who floats around and just sits and watches the TV and the computer all day, but I am not. I'm traveling. I'm going to different functions. I have a family. I'm doing different things, and I am able to get my action down 90% of the time, if not almost 100% of the time, when I want to. Yes, it requires a little effort. Yes, it requires, I just got to get back to this email at a dinner or at a meeting that I'm with people, and the email I'm getting back to is, you know, putting in a wager or messaging someone to get a wager down for me or whatever. So there is a way to do it. It just depends if it's worthwhile to you. If you're only up $50 better, maybe it's not. But if you're $1,000, $2,000 better, that return that you can get in play is rather sizable. So it should be something you think about and something you strategize so that you can utilize it for increasing your overall performance. So the mailbag went a little longer than I expected at about 20 minutes there for the first section of the podcast, so I'm going to jump over to the selection portion of the podcast. And of course, it's a new week and there is an Ole Miss football game, so I've got to cover that first. Ole Miss is playing Florida. Florida is at Ole Miss this week. The line is 16.5 at most books, although if you shop, about 40% of the market is at 15.5. So, you know, depending on which way you want to go on this, shop around, because if you want Florida, you can get 16.5. If you want Ole Miss, you can find a 15.5 out there. The feeling that I have on this game is a little mixed. I don't have a clear lean at this point. Now, I will definitely share that later on in the week as stuff comes out, news, information, etc., that I can digest, and perhaps that will push me one way or the other. On the total, I'm leaning a little bit to the under, but I'm holding off on that as well. I want to really see what goes on this week. The weather is going to be slightly cooler in Oxford than it's been, but it's still going to be in the 60s at around game time, which is incredibly comfortable football weather. So I don't see that really having an effect. Thank God, doesn't appear there's going to be any rain or wacky weather conditions. So it's going to be a pretty clear game. Weather won't really have an effect. I don't believe wind will either. So when it comes to the total, I'm up in the air. I could see why this could be an over. I could see why this could be an under. So I'm not even going to break it down yet. Let's see what goes on. If there's some sharp money that comes into play and other information I get, I will gladly report later on in the week as to what I see. When it comes to the side, so there's the typical handicapping angle of last week, Ole Miss won 49-0 over Citadel, walked all over them. And last week, Florida got embarrassed and a crushing loss in a game they really should have won. And to have that combination in handicapping is one where you tend to go with the team that got their ass kicked. So in this case, that would be Florida. You know, why? Well, Ole Miss is rolling along. People see that. The perception is Ole Miss should destroy a Florida team that couldn't get past Kentucky. And as such, I'm going to bet Ole Miss, not me personally at this time. I'm just saying this as an individual John Q. public bettor. And because of that, the book knows that's what's going to go on. So they increase the price on Ole Miss, knowing that more people are just going to blindly bet Ole Miss. So you're technically usually getting a value on the shitty team in this situation where you have one team that's rolling along and you have another team that just got an embarrassing upset loss that they had to absorb. In that case, Florida. So when it comes to a handicapping angle, yeah, I would probably lean to Florida with the points here from a pure handicapping basis. There is another dynamic in this game which is holding me off from saying Florida is the value and the play. And that is Florida is also the leading rumor, you know, the leading place that the rumors are pointing to that if Lane Kiffin's going anywhere, it would be to Florida, and that Florida is ready to throw a ton of money Lane Kiffin's way to get him out of Oxford, get him over to U of F, and see what he can do with that program. Whether he does that or not, you know, that's up in the air. I don't think he would. He's made comments recently that money isn't important. He's done a lot of, you know, being at home in Oxford and tweeting out things like that. So you never know. Could be negotiating stuff too. But with that being said, I could see Lane wanting to kick the shit out of Florida. I know that the Ole Miss fan base absolutely wants to see it. Because Florida sucks so bad this year, this would be one of those games at Ole Miss and at Oxford. There's not a big population in Oxford, although there are plenty of students and such, that, you know, it's a game where you might not see full attendance, but I think it's going to be full this week. And I think the student section is going to be rocking this week. And the reason for that is last season, Florida is probably, Florida and Kentucky, but probably Florida more at the end of the season is the reason Ole Miss did not make the playoff last year. Ole Miss remembers it. They know it. They were embarrassed in that game. And it's one that they really should have had and, again, been in the playoffs. So it prevented that. So there's a lot of emotion circling around this. And, you know, you don't want to bet with the heart of the emotion. You don't want to bet, you know, like, oh, this team, I love this team. They should destroy this one, whatever. You don't want to bet from that angle. But emotion is very powerful in sports. You see it all the time. That's why the revenge angle is something people like to target. That's why the, you know, someone had a, you know, family problem or whatever, you know, they're banging too many massage ladies or whatever it is, and that gets out, and this week they're not playing good. Because emotion affects performance. It can decrease it. It can also increase it when it's channeled properly, which is difficult, but it can happen. And that's why I talk about emotion a lot in your betting. If you're betting with negative emotion, you're fucked. It's over. If you're betting with positive emotion, you can kill it. And it's just that simple, that little switch. So in this game, I think the emotion very much favors Ole Miss. Florida is just downtrodden, just got embarrassed. I don't know how well they're going to be able to get themselves up for this big game. I think they can. I do have concerns here, which is why I don't have an official selection on this game just yet. But if it was strictly handicapping based, I'd be on Florida. But when you bring that emotional angle into it, I could see Ole Miss just kicking the absolute shit out of Florida and winning this game 48-10 or something going away. So not ready to make a bet, but gun to my head, you're asking me what would I bet? Lane Kiffin loves to hit the over and he loves to cover for the boosters. So I would go Ole Miss and the over, gun to the head, have to place the bet. Fortunately, where I'm sitting right now, there is no gun to my head. So I'm going to hold off on forcing anything out there on this, but it's definitely something I'm watching because I do think there's an opportunity. Just depends what information shapes up, whether that opportunity is the under, the over, the dog, or the favorite. So let's see how it plays out. But at this moment, what am I leaning? Ole Miss and over. And guess what we had last week? Holy shit. We had a winner on the My Handicapping Game of the Week of the Year. What is going on around here? Tulane gets it easy. Yeah, maybe gave you a little sweat at the end, but Tulane gets the win. We're now 3-5 on the season with the My Handicapping Game of the Week of the Year. Where am I going this week? Oh, it's another ugly one. It's going to be South Carolina plus the 19 over Texas A&M. My handicap on this one is very simple. There are multiple people, including someone I was just speaking about, Lane Kiffin, who say that Texas A&M should actually be the number one team in the country. The fact that they aren't is an injustice of some kind, but there's a lot of inflation going on this week in Texas A&M's value. And I think that is reflected in this spread. And South Carolina is not a good team in record, in performance, but they are sneaky good in keeping games close. They played Ole Miss this year, and it really was a game. I wasn't sure if Ole Miss was going to cover. Ole Miss covered sort of at the end there and then was able to hold South Carolina, but South Carolina actually had a chance to get the garbage touchdown and the cover against Ole Miss. And in that game, I believe the spread was 12. So, you know, this one, we're getting more points. Yes, Texas A&M is higher ranked than South Carolina, but Texas A&M is coming home after a decent road trip that they had. Finally coming home, I could see this being one of those, hey, we're home, they chill out, it's South Carolina, no big deal, we're going to roll them. And this is a little closer than people expect. So that 19 is very tempting to me. So the My Handicapping Game of the Week of the Year, South Carolina plus 19. There was some small sharp money that came in on 19.5. So I like taking the 19 because worst case, if the sharps win, worst case, we push. So South Carolina plus 19. Let's get to 4-5 on the season with these plays. Let's get the run because I've never had a losing season on the My Handicapping Game of the Week, and it's not going to happen this year. So let's get that going. That covers me on the selection content I have for you. Now let's get into a little My Two Cents rant. All right. The last but not least is the My Two Cents this week. And I'm going to discuss something that I put out there. You can read this if you like at tsp.live/cold. So just put in your browser tsp.live/cold, which is spelled, for those who struggle with it, C-O-L-D. And really what I have up on that page is something that is a note to people during cold runs so that I don't have to keep saying the same thing over and over and over again. If you're following the sharp plays, there are going to be a lot of cold runs. Now, I realize that most of the handicappers that are out there will tell you they never have a cold run. It's amazing. They hardly ever have a cold run. And when they do, it's like one day where they go 1-2. And that is the extent of their cold run. Otherwise, they hit 80%. I don't know how they're not billionaires hitting 80%, but somehow maybe it's limits. It's probably limits. They just can't get enough action down to be billionaires despite hitting 70, 60, 65, 85, 80% on their game. So, you know, with them aside, for most of us professional gamblers, you have cold runs all the time. And when you've been in the business, in my case, as a gambler since the 90s, as a professional gambler, what I consider a winning gambler since the early 2000s, and as someone who's done the TSP content since 2011, you're going to have a lot of cold streaks in that time. Hundreds and hundreds of hundreds. I mean, based on, you know, just using average calculations, I probably had over 700 to 800 cold runs in my gambling life. It's a lot. And when you've had that many and another one comes in, you're done talking about it. You've seen it all.
It's the old
farmer's quote where it's, we've seen a thing or two, so we know a thing or two. Well, I've seen a thing or two when it comes to cold runs, and there's nothing new about them. Some of them, you lose every fucking ticket you put out there. You're just betting and you're like, I'm 0-12. And someone will then message me and go, holy shit, we're 0-12. This has never happened to me before. Well, you're fucking new, clearly, because this has happened to me before. I've gone 0-20. I've gone 0-25. But you know what? Holy shit, I'm still here. So somehow I was able to overcome that run. Which is why when haters want to point out it's like 0-20, it's silly. And this is why I like haters, because you know they point out something that's just so stupid, because yes, you're going to have those runs. So if you sit around long enough and follow the sharp plays, you're going to be able to call me out for an 0-10 run or an 0-20 run on, you know, portfolio tickets or something like that. Now the catch is going to be that 0-21 probably isn't at one unit a piece on the action. We're probably down to 0.1 units at the end there. So that 0-20 run, if managed properly, is 3 to 5 units of actual loss. And that's the important part, is what you're managing your loss. So anyways, long story short, is I put this letter out there on the website, which you can get tsp.live/cold. And it's a form letter that I'm going to send to anybody who's having trouble with a cold streak. And it's not anything to be mean or rude or impersonal, but I like to think that the message that's up there is rather sympathetic. If you haven't read it, I'll go over it real quick here. But it basically details, I said basically again, that's been a running theme here. I apologize. I'll have to go back and count. There's probably 36. I don't know why that's the word of the day. Word of the day, basically. But here's the note. I genuinely respect your concerns and understand the frustration that comes during a cold run. But after over 15 years with the sharp plays and having gone through hundreds of these streaks, and that's just with the sharp plays, let alone the hundreds that I've gone to before the sharp plays content ever existed, I simply don't have the capacity to discuss them one by one anymore. So rather than ignoring you, I've created this statement as a respectful reply. Cold runs are not new, rare, or unexpected. They've happened every few weeks since TSP launched in 2011, and every time they pass. And any losses are eventually returned to us with profits on top, and that has happened every single time over the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds that I've experienced through the years. Even those early cold runs that I experienced before I was a professional gambler, the losses there have since been overcome because as a professional gambler, I've been able to make substantial profits year over year that long erased what I was betting back in the 90s and early 2000s. Back to my letter here. The emotional types always act like every cold run is somehow different than the last, and that means the long-term run is over. They aren't, and it isn't. During cold runs, bad beats pile up. Emotions run high. We can't cash a ticket to save our lives, losing 5, 10, 15, 20 plus in a row. Lines that we bet immediately move opposite the wagers we are on. So we'll bet, you know, Tampa -5, and next thing you know, Tampa's a fucking pick. And you go, what the shit? Yeah, you followed some sharp money that got slammed on the other side by a massive group or something like that. And yes, that happens all the time in different cold runs. And then, of course, because of all this, confidence drops. I've seen it all before, and while I'm sympathetic, I've learned that staying calm, patient, and consistent is what separates professionals from the public. If this kind of stretch feels unbearable, that's not a reflection of TSP content. It's a sign something's off in your bankroll management or mindset. You might be, one, betting too much for your financial situation. This is a common thing that happens. People, you know, they don't keep a 100-unit bankroll. They don't even keep a 50-unit bankroll. They have 2,000 or 3,000 in the bank, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I've started there. Everybody starts there. And they're betting $500 per bet. So they have a $500 per unit wager, essentially, and they have 6 units of bankroll to their name. That's never going to work out ever. It has never, ever, ever worked out. Unless you have some sort of incredible luck and you're able to turn that 500 into 300,000 through some screwy parlay. And I love parlays, but turning 500 into 300,000 is not a parlay I tend to bet. Then you're going to struggle with this. Cold runs are going to be tough. The other thing that you could be doing that's a problem is chasing or pressing. So not only are you betting too much for your financial situation, but now you're chasing, and so you're betting more than you should be on more games, and you're betting a higher level than you should be on those games. Or you're just struggling with the fact that in this case, you're struggling with the natural variance of gambling. Gambling is wins and losses. People love the wins. They can't handle the losses. That's why more people aren't professional gamblers, because they fall to pieces when they lose. If you want to be a professional gambler, you have to figure that out. So those things that I just described aren't character flaws. They're lessons every better faces before leveling up to a professional. If you can recognize these issues now, if you can recognize why you get so fucking emotional over every single cold streak and have to treat every single cold streak like it's this new experience that you've never had before, and oh my God, the run is over, then you're going to have a problem. And if you can recognize those things, though, if you can recognize those flaws, then you're on the way, you're on the path to becoming sharper and more resilient. As my aunt, who passed away, used to say, this too shall pass. And she was always right, whatever it was. Because life, most of the time, yes, I know there are unique situations out there and many unfortunate ones, but when it comes to your gambling, this too shall pass usually always plays out. My aunt was always right when she said, whatever the situation was, that this too shall pass. And whatever cold streak comes up, if you're with the sharp plays, at least I can't say if you're with Joe Blow, who sold you on his 80% win percentage, if he's going to dig you out of the hole on his cold run. But I can tell you when it comes to the sharp plays with 15 years of performance data that we always, always get the money we lose in a cold run back, and we put profits on top. And then we'll have another cold run, which will take some of those profits away, and then we build more on top. And that's how the grind works, and that's how we always achieve the net profit. TSP has never had a losing year. Profits rise over time, even when short-term results sting. So take a breath, ride the wave, and know that the long-term edge remains intact. Did I say intact or intact? Well, it's intact, but whatever. I know getting a pre-written response might feel impersonal, but please know it comes from respect. I value every follower and supporter, even you haters, whiners, and crybabies. I just can't keep reliving the same emotional cycle 20 plus times a year, every year, for a decade and a half. I can't do it anymore, guys. It's been a pleasure. I'm happy to answer strategy questions, but if you're sending me a message, which happens every fucking cold run, about, oh my God, this is awful, I don't know what to do, I'm going to send you this link, and then it's up to you whether you can get your brain around it and dial yourself in, or you can't. And if you can't, that's okay too. You'll go somewhere else because you'll believe somehow the sharp plays is a fraud because we don't win every single fucking day or week or month. You'll go somewhere else who tells you that they do win every single day, week, or month. And you'll buy into their bullshit, and you might get hot with them. Maybe you get lucky and they open and you do really good. But I will guarantee you over time, you're going to lose money with them. You're going to be even cooked harder than you ever were in any cold streak that you had to endure at the sharp place. It is just a fact of the game. Why is it a fact of the game? I've been doing this since the 90s. I've monitored every service that's out there. You know why? Because I would like to follow a sharp place service. But as I've said countless times, there is not a service like the sharp place out there. So I had to become part of it to make it. And here we are today. And that's why you're listening to this. And I thank you for that support. And as this message reads at tsp.live/cold, thanks for your understanding, for sticking with the process, and for believing in the long game. Good luck to us, as always. That's probably the best way that I could end the podcast today, is to thank all of you for listening, to wish you good luck. And here's to a great week ahead. We had a great month of September, printed money in September, absolutely killed it. Gave a little back in October. November has been kinder to us. But you know what? It's been a little while since we've had one of those epic weekends. We had one, two in September. So we're due for one. Let's hope it's this week ahead. Cross our fingers. Thank you for being a part of the action with me. Once again, can't say it enough. Good luck to you. Thank you for your support. Thank you for following. Thank you for being a part of the Sharp Plays. You allow me to do what I do. You allow the team at the Sharp Plays to get the information into your hands. Thanks to your support. Without you, it would not be possible. Let's give the books hell this week. Cash those tickets. I'll see you next week on the next episode of the Go Fast and Win podcast, powered by the Sharp Plays and TSP.live. Last but not least, go Rebels.